on it if we need to backtrack, but I'll go ahead and keep going. They also had another recommendation to forward to the City Council. They requested that that planning staff include a condition of approval that would alert buyers of the site's proximity to the existing commercial uses. So as I showed on that earlier map, there's a large number of C3 zone properties. This is this would be considered an infill site for housing. And so their concern was a need for a disclosure for or buyer acknowledgement regarding the zoning and the permitted land uses. So they have come up with a draft disclosure and buyer acknowledgement, and then staff has added a condition of approval to, I believe it's Resolution C, that a disclosure and buyer acknowledgement regarding the zoning and permitted land uses would be provided to all prospective buyers as soon as practicable and before transfer of title. And really what this is going to do is anyone who is looking to, you know, purchase a lot in this subdivision would be aware that they're around of, you know, C3 commercial industrial uses, and as long as they're abiding by the zoning ordinance and the noise ordinance built into the zoning code, that you know, there is this is really how we get infill housing. There's kind of a little bit of a trade-off, but they're still going to have to abide by the noise ordinance. So it's not you know, we just don't want people complaining, oh, I have a construction yard behind me now. Well, it was there before you were here. So that's what the purpose of this is. As mentioned, there are some oak tree removals proposed with this plan. Back when this was the Covelop Industrial Project, there were nearly the same oak tree removals proposed, and they were previously approved by council. Oak tree number 3 has since fallen and is dead, and since the council made their last action back in 2024. So it's no longer a part of the requested action, but we wanted to show it on the map. And then previously, I'm going to forget if it's, I think it was 13, tree number 13 was okay, but when the arborist reevaluated the tree from moving from an industrial project to a residential project, it just wasn't, it was in such bad health, and when you start adding families and, you know, the safety aspect came into play, the arborist changed the recommendation to remove tree number 13, I believe it's 13. And so in this case, oak tree number 10 is the only tree to be protected. As I mentioned before, the total inches for removal is 265 inches. The tree replacement requirement, it would be 67 inches. They are going above and beyond this requirement. At a minimum, they would have to plant 34 replacement trees. So this is the graphic that the applicant provided showing the location of their replacement trees. Just because of the sheer number of trees being removed and what's going to be replanted, we did have their arborist review this to make sure the trees were going to be planted in a good location, especially in some cases, you know, staff was worried if it was going to be in somebody's backyard, maybe with only 10 feet, not really having enough room. So we went back and made revisions per the arborist recommendation. So this is the final layout, but certainly moving forward, if the arborist had different recommendations, we could readjust as needed. So this project is subject to the California Environmental Quality Act. So I want to note that on February 20th, 2024, the City Council adopted a mitigated negative declaration for that Covelop industrial project. With this new project, we prepared an addendum to that 2024 MND, and it was determined that there have been no substantial changes to the project that require essentially us opening up and doing a brand new environmental study is what all of that says. So I don't need to read it. But it was a really thorough effort. We looked at, you know, this is basically, even though it's two different uses, it's a similar impact in terms of environmental review. And so we've prepared that addendum, noting that there are some mitigation measures that were previously as part of that 2024 MND that are going to carry forward with this new project. So this includes biological mitigation measures for nesting bird surveys, avoiding direct take of kit fox during construction by including worker education training and den surveys, and then also a mitigation measure regarding cultural resources, and that if any human remains are encountered during ground disturbing activity, that the project would stop within a 100-foot radius of the find. And so really what I want to just kind of highlight on the addendum to the MND is that the project did not, it was evaluated and analyzed, and there are no new impacts. So we looked at all the different criteria that are required by CEQA, traffic, noise, aesthetics, and it was, with all of those and with all of the supporting material and documentation and studies that were required for this project, there were no new issues that were raised, no new impacts, nothing more intensive, and so we are able to carry forward with the addendum to the mitigated negative declaration with these three mitigations to carry forward. I will note that there is a change to resolution 26XXX for this would be essentially resolution C, exhibit B. We had two engineering conditions of approval that at the last minute we discovered are actually not necessary and irrelevant because they do with a lot merger or lot line adjustment, and there is nothing to that effect. And so with the City Council's action tonight, we would request that this be considered to be omitted from that exhibit. So this would be conditions of approval numbers 36 and 37. All right, so the council has several options that you could take tonight. So because this requires, the rezone, it requires changes to the ordinance, the council, of course, could take no action. Option two would be to approve the project by making a number of actions. And so the first is approving the resolution A, which would certify the addendum to the mitigated negative declaration for the plan development, the rezone, the modification, the vesting tentative tract map, the conditional use permit, and the oak tree removal. 2B would be to introduce for first reading by title only an ordinance that would approve the rezone 2503 regarding those updates to the zoning code and the zoning map. And just to kind of reiterate, because it's been a while since I highlighted it, those are dealing with the mixed use overlay to allow residential uses by right, and that special plan development K, which is allowing, zero lot line development. It's really just allowing special criteria for this site. 2C would be to approve resolution 26XXXB, approving an allocation of 154 surplus density units to the subject parcel. 2D is to approve the resolution 26XXX, resolution C, approving the development plan, the conditional use permit, and the modification, noting those changes to Exhibit B. 2E is to approve the resolution dealing with the vesting tentative tract map 3255. And then lastly, 2F would be approving resolution 26XXXE, which would deal with the oak tree removal request, oak tree removal 25-09. Lastly, if the council could also provide alternative direction to staff. However, being that Planning Commission has reviewed this and council has, considered the reservation of units back in end of 2025, altogether with Planning Commission and staff's recommendation is to approve the project. And I won't read all these again, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them, but just note that we have an applicant presentation as well.
Okay. Last question, do we also want to have the applicant speak or do anything before we get into questions? Yeah, let's if we can, Darcy, let's get the applicant. Come on up, please. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor Hammond and council members. My name is Ian McCarville. I'm a land use consultant at Kirk Consulting, and I'll be sharing a brief presentation on this project. So as you've heard from Darcy, this project has gone through quite a few iterations. The site was originally approved in 2024 with a mixed-use light industrial and commercial project, following an application submitted in 2021. The applicant actively pursued that concept, seeking tenants, financing, and construction, but ultimately there was no market interest. This is consistent with what we're seeing more broadly, with nearby projects like The Landing and the Paso Robles Commons facing similar challenges and a significant amount of commercially zoned properties in the airport area remaining vacant and undeveloped. As market conditions evolved, the applicant revisited this concept and proposed an age-restricted housing project in 2024. While that concept was not supported, it did ultimately help inform the applicant and city staff in refinement of this project. That process led to the proposal before you today, which was submitted in May 2025. And ultimately, this evolution reflects a shift toward a use that better aligns with current market realities, the city's housing needs, and the long-term vision for this area as a mixed-use node. The proposed project includes 154 multifamily townhome units along with centrally located clubhouse and a network of open spaces and internal circulation. Development will occur in two phases, which will allow the project to be built out incrementally as infrastructure is completed. A key design feature of the site plan was organized around the preservation of a large, healthy oak tree, which serves as a focal point for the community and where the project derives its name, the Oak at Ardmore. From an entitled standpoint, the project also includes a request for the mixed-use overlay and a special plan development overlay, which together allows the residential use and the flexibility needed to achieve the proposed site design and density. The project also includes a request for an oak tree removal permit for one additional tree beyond those previously approved as a part of the commercial and industrial project. In terms of existing neighborhood characteristics, the site is located within the C3 zoning. While this designation does allow for commercial service uses, development in this immediate area is relatively low intensity, consisting of uses such as Spur Construction, Case Pacific, Daniels Woodland, and Autocraft Collision Repair. The surrounding area is otherwise generally developed with single-family residences and also includes Fire Station 3, as well as Paso Robles School District and Culinary Arts Academy. When considering a broader neighborhood context, there's R1 zoning with existing single-family residences directly south of the site, as well as near Case Pacific and Spurs Construction, and further west along Ardmore Road. In addition, we have North Chandler Ranch located to the south and east, and recreation uses situated to the east as well. While the base zoning for the site is C3, the surrounding area already includes a mix of residential and recreational uses. As such, the project would function as a natural extension of these existing development patterns and is well-suited given the proximity to these uses. In a broader context, it's clear that this site is well-suited for higher density, attainable, and affordable by design housing. The project is located near a wide range of goods, services, recreation, and employment. Within about a mile, we have the Golden Hills Plaza, Paso Commons Business Park, the existing and future Ravine Water Park, the future Marriott Hotel, the Paso Sports Club, and Barney Schwartz Park. The Landing Business Park is also just about a mile and a half away. When looking at housing opportunities further north, these opportunities are largely constrained by airport land use zones that restrict residential development, making this location one of the more viable areas for this part of the city to accommodate housing. Additionally, Ardmore Road includes continuous sidewalks on both sides in most areas and at least one side along the entire length, providing safe and accessible pedestrian corridor. These sidewalks connect to the broader circulation network, linking the subdivision to the nearby businesses along Golden Hill Road, including Enterprise, At Home Massage, Mark's Tire Service, various supply stores, and two churches, just to name a few. The sidewalk network continues to Golden Hills Plaza, allowing a resident to realistically walk from the project site all the way to destinations such as Lowe's or the new Trader Joe's on a continuous sidewalk. So from a location standpoint, this site is not isolated. It is an ideal location for housing where residents can easily access these nearby amenities, services, and employment centers. Looking at the city's future roadway network, it also becomes clear that extending residential development from the north, from the existing neighborhoods to the south, is both logical and intentional, as the planned streets will provide direct connections to these destinations previously mentioned. Additionally, an important part of this project is the construction of the Ardmore Road extension across the site, which will serve as a key future connection point for developments to the east, and will also feature sidewalks on both sides, providing safe pedestrian access. When evaluating how this project fits into the broader city's housing goals, it also aligns in several key ways. As Darcy noted, the site has been identified as an ideal location for higher density residential development. It supports the city's policies and housing objectives and benefits from its location within an established urban area. It was also identified as a priority opportunity site through the multifamily accelerator program, where the mixed-use overlay is intended to provide flexibility and help encourage housing production. In addition, the site was allocated the 154 general plan surplus density units back in November 2025, and the project has remained materially the same since then. With approval of this project, those density units can now be assigned, and the project would deliver approximately 75% of the city's housing entitlement goals for 2025 and 2026 combined. The site has also been identified as a prime location for higher density housing as a part of the Cal Poly concept plan for the North Chandler Ranch. The study evaluated how this area could serve, or how it could be developed over time, and specifically identified the property for mixed use and higher density residential. The vision is to extend existing neighborhoods northward in a logical way while introducing more compact and efficient housing designed to achieve higher densities. While this project may be the first residential project in this area, based on everything I shared, it is clear it will not be the last. Diving a little bit into the site design, the project is planned around a fully connected circulation network for pedestrians and vehicles. A continuous system of sidewalks and internal pathways links all residential buildings, open spaces, and the clubhouse, promoting walkability throughout the site. From a vehicular standpoint, access is provided from Ardmore Road Extension, with internal private roads that allow for full circulation and access to all units, guest parking, and emergency services. The landscape plan does incorporate a drought-tolerant and native planting palette that's intended to provide shade, structure, and visual interest throughout the site. Within this landscape framework, we also have a variety of recreational amenities that are provided, including open turf areas, walking paths, picnic spaces, and a woodland-themed natural play area for families and children. The townhomes will be organized into 34 buildings at a density of just under 12 units per acre in both 4- and 5-unit configurations. The two primary building types will be front-loaded and rear-loaded, with a key distinction being the garage orientation. Front-loaded units are located along the perimeter of the site, and are accessed directly from private alleys, whereas the rear-loaded units are located more internally, where garages are accessed from the opposite side, ultimately allowing the primary frontage to be located in a more pedestrian-friendly area. Units range from 3 to 4 bedrooms, with approximately 1,400 to 1,700 square feet of livable space. Each unit includes a private entry, private garage, and private open space. Architecturally, the project is inspired by an agrarian theme with modern forms and maintains a consistent design language across the site while incorporating variation in massing and roofline design to maintain that architectural interest. The project also includes a centrally located clubhouse, which will serve as the primary hub for residents. The building provides approximately 3,000 square feet of recreation room for social and community activities, including outdoor amenities such as a covered patio pool and a pool deck. As Darcy mentioned, the project does include 2 special plan development modifications and then 4 development plan modifications. These modifications were supported by the Planning Commission, and I'd be happy to talk about any of them if there are any questions. And lastly, as a part of the approved project, I touched on it briefly, but there were 6 oak trees that were approved for removal. As a part of this project, we are asking for 1 additional oak tree to be removed. That is oak tree number 13, which was found to have significant internal decay and is now considered high risk for structural failure. Since resubmitting this application, tree number 3 has fallen, so that has been removed from our request. And in terms of the mitigation, we're required to replant a total of 34 trees, and we're proposing 37, so we're exceeding that mitigation requirement. So in conclusion, the project will bring additional housing opportunities to the community and is consistent with the city's general plan, housing element, mixed-use overlay objectives, and promotes efficient use of land through a well-designed development. Based on this, we respectfully request the City Council adopt the staff and Planning Commission's recommendation and approve this project. Thank you, and we are available for any questions.
Very good, Ian. Questions of the applicant first? I do too, yeah. Pro Tem Gregory, let's start.
First of all, I'd like to disclose that I've had a couple conversations with Michael Stolte about this project and educating myself about it. My question's a little bit of a curveball for you. So on the oak tree removals and the oak tree replacements, I'm an advocate of live oaks, and I think it'd be a really good idea to get 50% of the oak trees to be live oak because they provide a certain environment annually all year round, and I think that's a good idea. I'll reserve my other comments. I think the project, I'm only supposed to ask questions, so that's all I'll ask. Thank you.
Councilman Bausch. So similar vein, the 37 trees to be replaced, is there, what's the guarantee for long-term survival of those trees? Is there a trust that's going to be in place? There's on-site management, looks like, if there's a clubhouse. Walk me through that.
Yeah, so we would be complying with the recommendations outlined in the arborist report, and the long-term maintenance would be something probably covered by the HOA, given that there are a lot of them are in the community-wide landscaped areas.
Can we confirm that? I'm worried that, I mean,
with any kind of replacement, whether they're live oaks or otherwise, if they die, they're going to be unsightly, and it's going to leave a gap. If you can circle back, I don't need to know tonight, but just...
Yeah, I can definitely get a more direct answer.
Councilmember Beal.
Thanks. Super presentation, that was very helpful. In some of your documents, you reference workforce housing or affordable by design. Do you have a definition for that, or what do you have in mind when you use those words?
Yeah, so when we say affordable by design, it's really this attainable housing product that's kind of targeting these, you know, new home buyers coming into the workforce, smaller lot sizes, more compact living areas. You know, with this zero lot line configuration, you really do have these much smaller lots. And so that is, you know, in a sense, a sacrifice for more affordability. And so when we say affordable by design, it's that compact idea.
Do you have a range of, and I know there's a lot of unknowns, and time is an unknown, do you have a range of asking prices that you might be thinking about for this project?
I'll let Mr. Michael Stolte come up and speak.
Yeah, good evening, Michael Stolte from MD3, as well as partnered with Covelop. So, I mean, we're going through that right now, and obviously we still have a ways to go on the project, and as we all know, over the last 10 years or so, things can change wildly with inflation and all of that, right? So we have to caveat that. But right now, you know, we're expecting these to be in the low 600s to the mid 600s, and in the county of San Luis Obispo, it's considered below moderate affordable housing. I believe if it's like, you know, don't quote me exactly, but I think it's 690,000. So by definition, although we're not deed restricting these, we're expecting them to come in at a, like, moderate pricing for the county.
Yeah, and just, I think the most recent publication was about 690 for a three bedroom to be considered workforce. It would be, I don't remember the number for moderate, which would be just under that, but you're kind of in that range, and so I appreciate hearing that. I know that you've all been involved with different projects, different clients, different circumstances. With any of these projects, do you ever reserve a portion of the units for purchase of local owner-occupied buyers?
Yeah, we have done that in the past. That's not something that we have considered on this project, but it's not something that we wouldn't consider. I mean, to be honest, as local builders, that's our goal, right? We would like these to be 100% for the local community. That's something that we can work with our brokers on, whether we build it. You know, it's not uncommon for us to give like a certain timeline for a wait list and things like that for local families. And given the time that these projects take, it's pretty reasonable to do that, so.
That's helpful. I mean, it seems in all of your presentations and materials that that's your intent. But, you know, it would be really nice to make sure that our local workforce has first dibs at certain number of units or something like that so that that intent could be actualized, because that's really what the community wants, and I know that that's important to me. What is your thinking in terms of construction time?
Yeah, so the project still has to go through final mapping. We would love to see that done in a very short amount of time, but historically that's usually kind of a 9 to 12 month process. And so, you know, we would finish final engineering on this project. We would have to get that approved by the city. And then, you know, you're starting to see horizontal improvements so they can get out there and start doing grading and things like that. So to answer your question in a long forum, you know, I would say it would be very reasonable to expect homes to be going vertical on this site in less than 2 years.
Okay. I think that's it for now. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, Ian, I had some questions for you and maybe some staff, too. I will also say that I had an ex parte with Michael Stolte on this project, you know, a little bit about what was going on there. And I think Darcy answered the question for me that the street going through the phase one, phase two, is going to be city dedicated to be designed to move on to the east beyond this project as well. What is the width of that street, though? I'm just curious. I didn't see a cross section on how wide it was. Do you have any idea? Can you tell us what the travel lane, and is there any parking on there? Oh. Leslie, maybe? Yeah.
Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. Leslie Frazier, City Engineer. The right-of-way is proposed to be 60 feet wide. Curb to curb, it will be 40 feet. There will be one vehicle travel lane in each direction, a 12-foot vehicle lane, and it will have 8-foot for on-street parking.
Parking, that's mm-hmm. what I was wondering
yep.
about.
And then there will be sidewalk and parkway
yep.
as well okay. on both sides of the street.
Perfect. Yeah, that's where I was going next. As far as on-site, and I think the garages are, a lot of them are tandem loaded with two-car garage, but then also parking in front of the garage off-street. Is that what I'm seeing on the plan?
Yeah, it was just in addition to the required, you know, two spaces per unit. The units that do have a driveway do have the option to have tandem parking there too. And then I believe we have 32 guest spaces spread out throughout the community with our higher concentration right in front of the clubhouse and the park as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. When you start getting four-bedroom units, I'm getting a little concerned about how the density of the parking is going to be on that. The other thing, too, I wrote down was that, you know, you are alerting the buyers to a commercial abutment, so to speak, in that area. But maybe a question for Warren. I'm a little concerned, too. Is this underneath the airport overlay? I know it's pretty much on the center line of the main runway. Does this extend out to the point where we need to also include notices of airport area?
Yeah, I think there's a standard disclosure that you're of the airport, but this is not within the restricted airport land use boundary.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, how far it extended out or if it covered any portion of this. So, okay. What else?
John, most of that is disclosed in a natural hazard disclosure report that buyers got. They're going to know that there's airport and ag use. And
yeah, well, that's why they obviously we talked about having a disclosure that commercial's right next door too, and that's what it's all about, making sure people know what they're getting into. So, okay, I think that's all I had. Any other questions from council?
I have questions for staff. Can we go back?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
And this could be for Darcy or Warren. I don't know. When was this originally zoned commercial? Do you have a sense? Plus or minus 10 years?
It would be at least back to the 90s, if not earlier.
Right. So this was originally zoned commercial before Barney Schwartz, before any of the housing on Golden Hill, before the Lowe's Center, before Bronco Burger, which is another fine amenity on Golden Hill, a long time ago. Ryan?
No, I think it was in tandem with just about the time Barney Schwartz Park was donated to us.
Got it. So, yeah. But a long time ago, right?
Yes, it's not anything new, that's for sure.
Yeah. And this was obviously noticed. And did you receive any comments or communications from neighbors or neighboring business owners or property owners?
No, I didn't receive any email correspondence. Of course, it would have been included in the packet. I did have a separate meeting with an adjacent business owner, the Daniels Woodland property, just to make him aware, and this was before Planning Commission, and he didn't show up to Planning Commission, so I think that, you know, he was neutral at this point.
Right. And then I'd like to have a little bit more information on the affordable housing component of this. So we've seen in other projects that anyway, I mean, maybe Warren or Darcy, you could talk to us how we got to this point. It's not something that's required as a policy by the city, but how we got to this point of the 2 points and the $60,000.
So as the applicant spoke, this is under your multifamily accelerator program. The purpose of that program is to encourage multifamily, kind of high density developments like this. The council doesn't have any specific policies for affordable units to be incorporated in. The idea is really about producing more compact development for housing. That said, this did require the overlay, it did require the allocation of units, so the council does have some discretion because of the rezone to ask for some additional items in a project. When we came before you with the ask for the allocation or the earmark for the 154 surplus units, that's when there was the discussion of, well, you know, would the applicant entertain, you know, some sort of contribution to the overall affordable housing program. That's where they proposed what's on the screen here, that $60,000, which would be consistent with the Slope County program. And that was debated by the council and accepted at that point. So that's what's been incorporated in the project.
It's on, Darcy. No, it's on.
It didn't sound like it. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I couldn't hear myself either. So the applicant can elaborate on what the $60,000 contribution really entails, because they describe it really well. If you would like to hear more, I would encourage you to ask the applicant.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah, Michael Stolte, MD3. So, you know, this is actually some work that we're really proud of. Outside of my day job where we try to build things, I sit and I'm a Home Builders Association board member and president at the current moment. And I also sit on the ad hoc committee with the County of San Luis Obispo and for housing. And one of the big pieces of work that we've done together with the County of San Luis Obispo was the County of San Luis Obispo and everybody really is in deep need of affordable housing. And so the question is, how do you do that? And what the county had previously done is done an inclusionary requirement, meaning like every time, you know, we build homes, in this case, 154 townhomes, there would be a requirement to do deed-restricted homes for that project, which has an altruistic, you know, component to it. The challenge is that those homes cost a lot of money, and what we're allowed to sell them for is historically under what they cost. And so it was actually breaking projects across the county. And so the county decided to repeal that and then said, okay, how do we fix our deed-restricted challenge? You know, these affordable home builders, they are able to build affordable deed-restricted units, and they can access state funds, grants, tax subsidies, and all these other things. But what they really deeply need, and what they've communicated to the county on this ad hoc, is that if they could just get some seed funding from the county, it allows them to go to the state and have a much stronger ask in their hierarchy of their projects to be able to get that state funding. And the seed funding is so important in that way that it generally is estimated that they can get around 9 times the seed funding for these deed-restricted projects. And so the county's resolution here was, okay, if we give builders the opportunity to essentially pay us a little bit of money to do things that help housing, which in this case, because you have a commercial zoned property in the County of San Luis with this program, they would charge developers 2 points to be able to move this to housing. Because it is, you know, it's a helpful thing for us and the community from a housing standpoint, but it is a change in zoning. And so we're simply mirroring what the County of San Luis Obispo has decided, which would be 2 points, $60,000. What's not said here, and I think what's most important, is that we're really proud about this in the sense that it is $60,000, which is real money to us. But the reality is that an affordable builder with this money now with the city, if the city gives this money to an affordable builder, they should be able to get something close to $550,000 of matching funds with that seed money. So, you know, we hope that this is not a requirement in the city of Paso. We wanted to do something that we think is meaningful and helpful. And that was kind of our suggestion.
Chris?
Michael, I think that's a really good way. As you said, the deed restricted model was broken, and it created problems down the road as somebody tried to sell, and it created more problems than it solved. So thank you for bringing this, not to be discussed tonight, but maybe a future item for council to consider how to make this kind of a model a reality. If you can leverage 60,000 to 500,000, that's huge.
It's a good tool, that's for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from council? Okay, we'll go ahead and open up the public. Anyone have any questions on this item, comes forward. Seeing none, let's come on back. Do we have anybody online?
Yes, sir. Jan Alvin.
Okay. Jan, can you hear us? Go ahead.
I can. Thank you. Not so much a question, but a comment. I sat through the hours and hours long presentation when we did a complete citywide rezoning. And it was very interesting and very informative. And ever since then, I've been taking note of the projects that come before the Planning Commission and City Council and obviously Warren Frace and his department. And so often they ask for a project to be rezoned. And so, and this is one of them. And I don't have a problem with this project. I think it's a great project. But that's not my question, and that's not my concern. Why do we spend the hundreds of, obviously, hundreds of thousands of dollars on staff time and presentations to zone something when a developer can come along and ask for a rezoning? I don't understand that. I don't like it. I don't understand it. Because it's really something that the public can't count on. Once you've zoned something, you know, the next door neighbors sit around and say, oh, great, that nothing that I thought I was going to be afraid of can go in next door because it's zoned this, but then the city is allowed to change that. I'd really like to know what the thought process is about conducting all of these surveys and all of these programs that zone this city, and then somebody can come along and ask for a variance or an overlay or whatever you want to call it, and we allow it to be changed. I'd like to know how that happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else online?
Yes, sir. Virginia Tate.
Virginia, can you hear us? Go ahead. Hello, Virginia.
Virginia, Harris, go ahead.
Hello, yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Yes, I have questions. Yes, hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Okay, I have questions about the big, oh my gosh, I'm getting feedback from the program. Let me get away from it.
Yeah. You need to
mute whatever is in the room with you.
Can you turn it down?
These issues.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, I'm concerned that that project is in the airport flight path because I remember back when you were approving the hotel, they had to cut the hotel project size because only a certain amount of people could be in the square footage because it was in the flight path. And that hotel is very close to this project.
So your question is about the airport overlay again?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll get that answered again. Anyone else?
Oh, I have another question, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, quickly, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I do. I just want to state that the owners that adjoining properties were not notified of this. And so you might want to figure out a way so that owners that are right in that immediate area are notified so they can chime in on this development with pertinent questions as far as setback zones and also the traffic impact. This is very dense housing, and so they're saying that there isn't a difference between the commercial buildings, the traffic generated from the commercial buildings, to this dense housing project. And I find that hard to believe. So anyway, maybe somebody could get back to me on that. Again, this is Virginia Tate. I lived at 2930 Union Road for over 40 years. And I lost my train of thought.
Okay. Thank you, Virginia.
Yes. So if you could get back to me, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Good night.
Anyone else?
No, sir.
Okay. Yeah, Warren, we can go ahead and get a couple of these questions if you would. I think Alvin's question was about changing zoning, and it all has to do with projects, and of course, can you explain how that's done?
Yeah, I think the basis of her question was two actions that the council undertook back in 2024. So the city did do a comprehensive update of the zoning code. So there's two parts to zoning. There's the zoning code, which is all the text of the rules, and the second part is the zoning map. So what was done back in 2004, and it was a multi-year, very expensive process, was to update the code section, but not the zoning map. So that's part of the answer to that question. The other piece is, you know, in terms of the rezonings we're looking at right now, that really is tied to the other action of the council in 2024, which was the Economic Development Strategic Plan, which included policies to implement this multifamily accelerator program, which was based on the idea of finding commercial sites throughout town that potentially could be rezoned with this multifamily overlay strategy to allow multifamily compact development. So this project moved forward under that policy. So there's two different things going on, but they're both consistent with council policy. But the council always remains and has discretion to change zoning, change general plan when they see fit. This is consistent with policies that you have adopted recently. Let me get back to my notes.
I think we had another question about the airport overlay again.
Yeah, so the second question is the airport overlay zone is very close by, but it does not touch this property, but the hotel that's just to the north, that's correct. It is subject to the airport land use plan. That's one of the reasons the multifamily accelerator program looked at sites, you know, near the airport, because these would be good housing opportunities for future industrial growth without being in that restricted zone. So that's one of the reasons this actually showed up on the multifamily accelerator program. In terms of noticing, this has been to Planning Commission and the City Council hearing. Both were noticed per our city standards. There's site notices, there's notices in the New Times, and then there's notices sent to property owners of record, but that is based on assessor information. So it's possible some folks, based on assessor information, might not have received that. That's why we have three different noticing processes, so folks do know about it. And then the traffic question, as Darcy mentioned, we did do an addendum to the previous CEQA documents that included a thorough traffic analysis. We have analyzed the traffic. This project actually creates less peak hour traffic than the industrial project would have done. So that's part of your findings tonight, actually, resolution A, I believe, deals with that. So that is part of your application tonight.
Just for my information and maybe the public, when we notify people of a project, what's the radius? How far away from the project do we actually notify?
300 feet.
300 feet. Thank you. Okay. I think we answered most of those questions. We'll bring back to council. Then we have quite a few things to deliberate and talk about. Any discussion on these items before we move in?
Yeah, I'd like to, number one, I did have a chat on the phone with the developer. And one of the things we talked about is the fact that I sit here now on this side of the bench, but I was at one time the national director of market analysis and planning for the 26th largest developer in the United States. And we did a lot of projects like this, and also I've lived near these projects. This reminds me very much of the BESCO project on Piedmont Road in San Jose, over on the east side. And it's almost exactly the same situation, close to a major arterial. In fact, it fronted on a major arterial. And so they turned the units inward from that, which solved the sound problem. So a lot, and they've answered almost all the questions the same way that BESCO did up there in the Bay Area. And it's a very successful project, by the way. And the same type of townhomes, exactly the same thing. Then on also, another good comparison is Sierra Bonita, right here. And that is the original Sierra Bonita, was mostly on one side of Turtle Creek and Turtle Creek Park, or what became Turtle Creek Park. Then the second phase went on the other side, and it backed up to industrial, just like this does. Only that was active industrial. It wasn't just planned industrial. It was actually already industrial. And sure enough, even though they'd moved in there, there came the complaints. And fortunately, the owners of those buildings and the developer worked together, and they put in just some landscaping that deaden the sound sufficiently to solve the problem. So it doesn't always take walls. It takes the type of the planting that they've done for the plantings that they're going to do, and all the trees and the bushes. This is very well designed, and it takes into account a lot of that thing. And one of the reasons we do these rezonings, of course, is it's private property, number one, and we have changing economic conditions as well as changing community conditions. And right now, manufacturing is kind of being subdued in that area. Commercial is being overtaken by online commercial, unfortunately. So commercial has slowed down tremendously. That's why we have so many vacancies in some of our commercial buildings now. So this is an outstanding project that answers a question that we've been trying to answer for decades. And oddly enough, we don't have all the answers, and none of these things that we do are going to solve every single problem. That can only be done by the Supreme God, and we're not him, and never will be. So we learn by our mistakes, but these are pretty good steps in that direction. And I like the project.
Thank you, Fred. Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah. I'd like to make a couple of interesting scenario comments. So the project recently by the Housing Authority in a commercial zone next to Kohl's, and that was funded with the kind of money that they're offering up for seed money for affordable housing. So I think it's a really nice project, and it's, people have to make money on their projects. I get it, and that's really important. But what I like about this project is the price point, first of all. It's a needed price point for home buyers in our area. Willingness to hold on to some of those houses for zip code buyers locally is really nice. Well-designed project, well thought out. And they've really been trying to build something there for a couple of years. So they have a really good team, and I think they've come up with a really nice design project. And I think it's difficult to get a perfect project, but this project has hit on a lot of really good areas, and I think it fits a really nice marketing need for us. I don't know if there's a RENA number that we're benefiting from this, but it's definitely for low or moderate housing RENA numbers.
It'll definitely help probably with our moderate category and for sure the above moderate, right. But both categories are, you know, we're looking to build as many as possible.
Right, and this is really and truly what I call a step-up buyer home. So the million-dollar homes on the Far East side are out of reach, but $600,000 to $700,000, that's attainable for somebody to sell a $300,000 or $500,000 home and move up into a nice area like this. And so I like the project. So well planned out. Thank you.
Councilman Bausch.
So in addition to Councilmember Strong and Gregory remarked, especially with the in-lieu fees and the reservation for local buyers, I think that the timeline reservation, I think that's, if you can incorporate that, that's obviously a marketing decision on your part, but I encourage you to look at that. I do like the zero lot line. I think we as a city, if we are going to be serious about changing the dynamic of our housing, whether it's workforce, moderate, or any, we have to get creative. We have to be different. So I think we follow the example as presented here. It's a good project. Makes sense. It's different. It might be uncomfortable for some, but it's something that we're going to have to embrace as we move forward. And probably, dare I say it, even more dense and even higher as we progress. We have to go vertical. We're going to solve this dilemma.
Okay. Councilmember Beal.
Thank you. As with the others, I also had a conversation with Mr. Stolte, along with Mr. Frace, along with the planning commissioner. I reviewed the planning commission meeting. It's a very interesting discussion, and I drove out to the site. Highly recommend, it's very important. I wanted to speak a little bit about kind of the location, because it does feel a little weird about that, but once you go out onto the site, and once you know what we know now about what's happening into the neighborhood, about what will be happening, about the plans, like towards the connector. It really makes sense. This project becomes a bit of a buffer, right, between the different land uses. And we have overlays and we have options and we can modify things because the world is changing. We have new information. I can tell you growing up here, I would have never imagined all of the houses on Golden Hill Road. I mean, at one point it was nothing and there was a big water tower and that was about it. We know, hopefully we are always learning, right? And we know more now than we did then. We know that our needs are changing. I think if they can really come in at this price point, if they can come in at a moderate or low workforce price point, that that's a huge benefit for the community. It is a different type of product that we don't have a lot of right now, and I think it would help people move out of some of the rental properties and keep people moving through the housing ladder. I think it's close to amenities, it's close to 46, it's close to the park. I think it's good for circulation. It moves housing and development and activity kind of off of the Niblick and the Creston corridor, which I think there's a value to. So I'm supportive of this. I just wanna, we've had some supportive reserving for local zip codes. I would add reserving for owner-occupied local zip codes. I really want buyers who are going to live there to have a shot at these properties. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I too. Again, it's a great project. I really appreciate staff and the developer working so hard to get this thing done. New tool. I mean, that offer of $60,000 that can grow to far more with granting and making other projects so more affordable is really what needs to be done. It's a new tool in the box, so to speak. Again, I really appreciate the design that you guys did. You know, tot lot, young families, kids, it's going to be perfect for that kind of a effort for them to have ownership of a home. So I'm good with it at this point. Do we have anybody that would like to move forward on
yep.
any kind of direction?
Mayor, I'd like to make a 6 motions, I guess.
Yep.
Is that right, City Attorney?
Oh, boy.
Individual motions.
Okay. So I'd like to thank the applicant for all the...
You don't need to do individual motions. You can do all of them in one motion.
All right. I can say a little more.
If you want to do 6, I don't want to stop you.
I just want to thank
you. You're not legally required.
Okay. I want to thank the applicant for tenacity and keeping your vision and introducing a product to Paso Robles that I think we're going to see far more in the future because the cost of building is just changing, and this is a great way to deal with it. And I have confidence in Mr. Stolte and his team to put it together. So I get to make one motion, and so I'll make it as under read the first in A, or you want me to just read the recommendation? What would you prefer?
We have a change on D that we have to modify a little bit. The changes to Exhibit B need to be eliminated on 36 and 37. So that was something that staff was asking for.
You can combine those in one motion.
Yeah, I like that exception.
Okay. The staff recommendation.
All right. I move that we approve Resolution 26XXXA. Certifying amendment to the mitigated negative declaration for plan development 25-14, rezone 2503, modification 2604, vesting tested tentative map, track map 3255, conditional use permit 2505, and oak tree removal 2509, and B through F with the noted changes requested by staff.
On D. On D.
On
right.
D.
Right. Okay, so we have motion by Gregory.
Question.
Sure.
Does that include the staff removing the recommendation, removing those two paragraphs?
That's yes. what we were saying.
With
yeah.
changes to Exhibit B.
Okay.
With changes on Exhibit
yeah.
B.
On D, we're changing Exhibit B to eliminate 36 and 37 per staff recommendation. So we have a motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Discussion. Okay, we'll call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, thank you.
Build it.
All right. Got to keep going here, guys. We're getting late. Discussion items. We'll close public hearings on that number five and then move on to item one and discussion. Second reading title only, adoption of ordinance 1168 authorizing an amendment to CalPERS contract to reduce cost sharing amendment or agreement for the unrepresented confidential professional and management employees in the police and fire safety members. Shannon, go ahead. Yeah, it's not very loud.
How about now?
There you go.
This evening I bring before you the final steps in amending the city's retirement contract as it relates to safety manager cost-sharing contributions. So just to summarize again, by way of background, the city contracts with CalPERS provide retirement benefits for eligible employees. The contract includes three member categories: police safety, fire safety, and miscellaneous, each with different benefit tiers. Retirement benefits are determined by a formula based on years of service, age at retirement, and highest reportable compensation. The city's contract requires contributions from both the employee and the employer. State law allows employees to share in the cost of the employer's contribution, which is commonly referred to as cost sharing. Currently, Tier 1 and Tier 2 safety managers cost share an additional 10%. Those in the pepper tier cost share an additional 6%. These additional contributions directly affect take-home pay and have increasingly been identified as a factor affecting recruitment and retention of public safety management personnel. In response, on December 16, 2025, Council approved a wage and benefits summary for management employees that includes a phased reduction in cost sharing for safety managers of 3% in 2026, an additional 2% in 2027. Once fully implemented, these changes will align safety manager contributions with those of Police Officers Association and strengthen the city's competitiveness among peer agencies. Changes to the city's contract must follow a specific statutory process. Completed thus far is approval of a resolution of intention, an introduction, and first reading of the ordinance, which occurred on March 17th. Additionally, a secret ballot election of the affected employees was conducted as required by state law. The second reading and adoption of the ordinance is before you tonight. If approved, the amendment and 3% reduction will take effect on May 24th. A second amendment will follow the same process, will be brought before you later on this year to implement the additional 2% reduction for 2027. This concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Good. Thank you, Shannon. Questions? Council? Anyone from the public? Come forward.
Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. I think I brought this up at one of the last meetings, but I wanted to take a stab at it again. I worked for the state from 1985 until 2014. I sought early retirement because I was disabled and injured from my job. And what I've learned 10 years past retirement, what a government pension gets you is a side hustle. I'm tier one. So, because I started in 1985. Now, the reason why I'm concerned about this is you guys